Hi, everybody. It is Thursday, 14 April 2022, and gosh, we have such a special episode today, and it's something that we don't talk about a lot. You know that I talk about mental health a lot and burnout, entrepreneurship, all these things, past trauma. But what we don't talk about a lot is domestic abuse, domestic violence. And if you didn't catch our episode with Erin Michelle on episode 138, I encourage you to go back and take a look at that, because we're going to be digging deeper into her story today with questions and answers. Also, we have a very special guest, Trent Hooker, with our local news here in Central Texas, 25 News KXSV. Go find him on LinkedIn. But what I jumped at the chance to message him because I follow him on LinkedIn. Also, because he helped publish a story on domestic violence. It was a whole half hour episode. But so let me go back and talk to you a minute about what he does. He's an executive producer at 25 Noons, and he helps to lead a team of diverse, multi-skilled journalists in Central Texas and the Brazos Valley. So he recently produced an entire half-hour program focusing on abuse called "Domestic Violence: A Crisis in Central Texas." It's crazy story, because I am in Central Texas, and you know everything that's happened in the Fort Hood area. Not all the good and the bad. Most it'd be political. So, and I don't talk about it a lot because I am still a military spouse and I am a retired veteran, and I try to keep that out of my posts and all that, because I have my own opinions. Everybody has their opinions, but this today we needed to talk about, because it's happening, it has been happening. And I just felt like we needed to shed more light on it, and from two different perspectives. Erin's in Fayetteville, North Carolina, near Fort Bragg. We are here near Fort Hood. So I'm gonna bring them on. We're gonna just dive into this and ask away. If you're watching this off of LinkedIn or our Facebook page, our podcast Facebook page, feel free to comment, share this out. Tag someone who you think needs to hear this, or that you feel could share this information. We would love to continue to bring this conversation out there so that we can help more people. But yes, we just need to ha make this happen. And so let's get to it. Hi, guys.
Hey.
Hey. So thank you both of you for being on here. Erin, I know that your story is just very powerful and healing and just everything. And Mr. Hooker, I appreciate your time. You're doing so much for us, but gosh, what an amazing show we're going to have today. So let's start with something. You did this half hour show about 2 weeks ago. And one of the things that I immediately wrote down, and we spoke about this, is that this year in Killeen has had over a dozen murders in 3 months related to domestic violence directly. What prompted you to take this story and just, share it?
Yeah, that's a great question, Annette. And thanks again for having me here, and always happy to be a part of such great conversations. And really, that's what got this prompted in the first place. So part of our major job in news is to be observant of obviously the stories that we're reporting, but also the stories within our community that are kind of happening in the background. And in regards to domestic violence and how that happened, we started noticing obviously the stories that we were doing each day, as they were getting more violent. These things are happening at home, and people are losing their lives. And often, in these cases, it's women and children. And our evening anchor, Todd Unger, actually, started adding up the numbers just that we were having over a 7-day period, and kind of stopped all of us in the newsroom and goes, "Guys, we've had 7 dead in 7 days from domestic violence. This is out of hand." And he actually coined the term that it was the pandemic within the pandemic, as we're obviously facing COVID-19 right now. We're still dealing with that. And it played a lot, you know, a large factor, as we kind of found, where, you know, people have been isolated for the last 2 years. The statistics show that the number has actually improved since 2020, but it's a false statistic. You know, that's what experts are saying, is that these cases didn't go away. People didn't get less violent. Homes didn't get better. It's just the ability to report, the ability for people to see that people are victims of domestic abuse and violence, that's kind of fallen by the wayside. And certainly that's what prompted our newsroom to kind of take action to bring this to the public forefront. You know, like you mentioned, Killeen's a small town here in Central Texas with a proud, rich history of public service. You know, you have Fort Hood, the nation's largest military post in the country here. And just a lot of these cases, they go hand in hand, where you have, like I mentioned before, the most vulnerable in our communities, you know, really, unfortunately, taking the violent brunt of these, you know, situations, which are shockingly getting more common and common. So that's what prompted us to do it. And really, our half hour special, it's kind of the tip of the iceberg as far as diving these cases.
Yeah. What have you received any feedback from that?
Yeah, that's a great question, too. So immediately when we broadcast this, I can just tell you anecdotally, you know, we had dozens of phone calls, dozens of emails from survivors saying, thank you for talking about this. Thank you for bringing it into the forefront. And more importantly, I want to tell my story. And really, at the end of the day, as a journalist, that is the best response we can hope to do for the public, is that we are keeping these conversations going, that we're keeping them in the forefront, and we're giving a voice to the voiceless. I know that's kind of a cliche line that reporters like to say, but at least here at, you know, 25 News at Scripps, which is our parent company, we try to shine a light, you know, on these stories that kind of been hiding in the background and often are untold, and really they need to be at the forefront of things that we want to change, certainly coming out of this pandemic, making our small towns and communities better.
That's incredible. I know that Aaron and I never even met in person, but we met on social media, like most of us do these days. But when she shared with me her story and we did her episode, the reaction that we got from that, Aaron, you had tons of people reach out to you.
Yeah, I had dozens of, I had helped a few women, I guided them in the general direction of where to get help and what they should do. But I had multiple women say, thank you. Sometimes I just need to hear that somebody else has gone through that and that I can make it. And I'm doing the right thing. I'm leaving. I filed that police report. I mean, just multiple people.
How did that make you feel? Knowing that because I know it was hard for you to even share your story, to even put it out there on the platform like this.
It was definitely hard, but it's not just freeing, for lack of a better term, but that quiet voice that has stayed silent for so long, I finally felt like this is my opportunity. Because Trent, one of the things that you say is the voices, you know, that they don't have, the courts shut us up, they shut us down, they ignore us, the police, everybody ignores you when you're going through something like that. And it almost takes death for somebody to ignite that flame and have that, oh my gosh, this is happening. So it feels really good to finally say, this is what I went through, and guide people in the right direction of getting that help.
Now, Trent, in the news story, I remember them saying, it was stated that the police department is now taking a different approach at how they respond to crime.
Yeah.
So with all, and it's a very touchy, because I know in the military, you know, sometimes there are cases that, I'm trying to say this correctly, because I don't want to get I don't want to put it out wrong. You can respond to a call, and it could have been just a disagreement, or it could have been this. So now that they're saying that they're doing that, how has that been for our community?
Yeah. One of the police departments that we highlighted in our special with Waco Police Department, with their victim services branch that they have, which they've had for a few years. And the approach that Waco takes is that obviously you're going to have the beat cops that respond to emergencies where, you know, they don't know what they're going into. I mean, each time they get the call, it could be the last one that they respond to, you know, just with the danger that's there. And like you kind of mentioned too, the details of these kind of cases, you know, certainly in the very preliminary stages, it's really hard for law enforcement to kind of make split decision, judgments on kind of what they're really seeing here. And more importantly, are they getting, you know, all the facts from all the people who are involved in it? And how Waco took a different approach is that when you have these kind of special victim crimes that happen, certainly with domestic abuse, they're sending the law enforcement element. They're also sending a social worker to help. And they're also sending kind of like a nonprofit coordinator to go out with the person, especially if it's a victim of domestic violence and abuse, to where they can help that person, you know, deal with the trauma that they're, you know, going in that moment. Aaron, like you kind of mentioned just with your story, every time I hear a survivor story, like I just can't even fathom for a second going through that and the mind of how you process that in the moment. It has to be just overwhelming.
It definitely was. When you're going through it, it's a lot, but and you're like, okay, I just got to get through this one last thing, and then there's another one, and it's definitely a mind twist. And when you get out, it's not over yet. So it's, I don't know, it's a whirlwind for sure.
Yeah, and exactly. And the approach that Waco is taking with it, with their victim services unit, with having that they know that women and men and especially kids, when they're going through these type of situations that they've been victimized, that they're there to offer that backstop to help them at least through the process. So they're not feeling like, hey, I'm completely all on my own. I don't know where to turn to. And, you know, kind of becoming a victim in that. And that kind of gets me to another story that we had talked about with just, you know, victim blaming that can kind of happen. I mean, certainly after these cases, we had a young lady named Sakaira Young. She was just 21 years old when she was actually a victim of alleged domestic violence. The man suspected in that case, her boyfriend, is still awaiting trial in that case. But at least what her mother says is that it was a very, you know, abusive relationship, that she had cried out for help for so long. But, you know, asking for that help too, even when it was pretty clear, her mother says, that she was a victim of that, that she was actually getting blamed for being the responsible one of being victimized. Yeah. So I certainly hear that, and it's just, it breaks my heart to hear, you know, men, women, and children, you know, who go through this, and they're not getting the help that they need, you know, and getting blamed for it.
So there arises a big question with that. How do we get help in all of the places for people to have that voice when it is serious? Do we just keep talking about it, rallying up? How do you get that help for women or men?
Yeah. Yeah. And exactly. I think that's another misconception too, where people might feel on the surface that, hey, this is just a women only problem. But men are also victims of domestic violence in situations too. And I think it's, you know, breaking those stigmas, you know, at least my opinion is that having these conversations about them, talking about them, destigmatizing the process of bringing it to light, that's a huge step. And also getting that conversation with our officials, you know, to having them look at it in a different light, and more importantly, for them to recognize it as a priority to where they can take action, kind of like with what Waco did. I think that, you know, at least on a budgetary level, if that's a major roadblock where people are saying, hey, times are tough for our police as it is, spending's tight, we can't do it. You have nonprofits, certainly in Texas, but across the country, who are already there, you know, doing the great work. And all it takes is a phone call. All it takes is an offer to partner with them. So I feel like the red tape is kind of what's holding it up, at least in my opinion. What do you guys
think? I agree.
I am so glad that you spoke about nonprofits, because that's the same with mental health. I speak on that a lot. And there's a lot of us veterans or still that are serving that are afraid to reach out because they don't want their command to find out. So that's where the nonprofits come in. They are there and they, you know, it's just you and them. They won't say anything unless, of course, they have to. But we don't talk about that enough. And I think we need to continue to bring that up. They are there to help us. They are there to help so many people. We just don't know about it. It's lost. So I'm so glad you brought that up. We need to continue to push that out. Then all the nonprofits for all the things, no one knows about it.
I didn't know about that. I called 100 numbers before I finally reached the Family Advocacy Program. And that's what got the ball rolling. That all basically saved that position that I was in. So that's a huge one. FAPS.
Oh my gosh. See, yeah, we need to share all that. One question I wanted to ask you, Aaron, was how did you weren't able to report your situation because for fear, right? I mean, he was still serving. So there was a lot of different factors involved. So how did you deal with that situation for those that are listening?
Well, for a good 6.5 years, I stayed silent. But when I finally did cry out, I did reach out to his command. The whole command and battalion basically swept it under a rug and told him to kind of no contact, stay away, leave her alone. They swept it under a rug and they hid it. But I had already contacted the Family Advocacy Program, and they put me in contact with a victim's advocate who ended up meeting with me. And we got everything documented and in line for safety. But it was so hard to figure out how to do that. You had to call so many phone numbers. You would go through JAG and then you were going through this phone number, and everybody would tell you, "Well, I'm sorry, we just can't help you." And he held a gun to his head and threatened my life and his, and nobody would help me. I couldn't get anybody to come out there and say, you know, this is how we're going to keep you safe. So that could have been the end of my life had I not, you know, continued to try to figure out where to get help. So we definitely need to put the resources out there.
So what would you tell someone that's in this situation right now? Either they're just too afraid or they don't know where to go, regardless of where they are.
You're going to be afraid no matter what. So at least take the proper steps in making yourself and your children safe. And they'll take the proper steps to keep you safe. Once you contact FAPS and it's reported, they are court mandated to start that process of reporting it and keeping you safe. So, it has to be reported. Otherwise, it's going to ultimately, your life is going to be ended. I firmly believe that eventually it's just going to be the end. So you have a choice here or living your life, you know?
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh no, I was finished.
What was the final step where you're like, I need to do something?
The gun to the head. A lot of things were broken. There was a lot of really scary things that were said of, you know, I've killed people and I've slept just fine and rocking back and forth and just all of these like red flags. Whereas normally it was that they would try to keep me. He would try to keep me there with those scary moments. But that's when it clicked for me, when he held that, he cocked the gun back and he held it to his head and was like, me first or you. And I sat down and I was like, this is ultimately my life is going to end if I don't get out of this. He used to tell me if I ever cheated on him, he would tell me how he would kill me and get rid of my body. Like I used to listen to some really awful things from that man's mouth, and just 7 years and that gun to the head, that's what it took.
So. I can't even imagine. And I thank you for sharing that, because there's so many other men and women out there that who need to know that you're not alone and just, you need to reach out. There's so many resources. So with your new story now, Trent, what do you think is the way ahead for all these these domestic violence situations, you think more people are going to reach out?
Yeah. And, you know, hearing Aaron's story, just going through that, it's just so concerning, you know, for obviously the family, and loved ones of military members who are going, you know, through that, and then just the process, it seems like, outside the military, it's kind of broken. And I know that kind of matches what, a lot of, you know, nonprofits are saying about the interaction with that. And, you know, I think there has been some good work that has come out recently. Certainly the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act, that was passed and signed by President Biden, at the first of the year, that made major reforms, at least on how military service members interact with one another, certainly when they're victims of crimes, alleged crimes of, you know, sexual assault, sexual violence, sexual harassment, and how the military deals with that. Because previously, obviously, the military would keep it all within their own command structure, mm-hmm. to where the commanding officer of a unit would be the point person to investigate, you know, what actually happened. But the I Am Vanessa Guillen Act removing that delegation of authority to an outside party to kind of look and see what happened. I feel like that was a huge breakthrough, at least for victims to be heard, victims to be championed. And I think the work that's still left to be done is obviously what happens off post, or what happens within the confines of a private home that might be on post. Just how that structure still works. There's a lot of gray area with that, at least how the military machine kind of works with wanting to, you know, make these reforms. Unfortunately, several people had to lose their lives until this made national headlines. And before that, the ones that didn't make headlines, I mean, those families are still dealing with the trauma. I mean, with the Vanessa Guillen story and how that all unfolded, in the course of trying to find her remains when she went missing on Fort Hood off the post, you know, for months, they were finding other soldiers that the Army at the time had said, like Gregory Morales, for example, that he went AWOL. His family did not know what happened to him. They said, you know, he deserted his post, and his family, I believe it was his fiance at the time and his mother living in Oklahoma, they're not entitled to any benefits because he failed to live up to his obligations as a soldier. Well, Gregory Morales' body was on post at Fort Hood, you know, and of course, by searching for Vanessa Guillen, they found him, and they found several other soldiers. And it's just those kind of situations where I feel like it takes a monumental action, you know, to bring that to the forefront, to where people have the conversations, where they talk with their local officials, where they talk with their state leaders, their national leaders, the Guillen family. I mean, you have an amazing situation to where there's a significant language barrier with Vanessa's parents and the Congress men and women who are trying to enact the law, but it still got done. That's what's amazing about it, because the story, you know, breaks through those barriers, and we need those same stories to come forward that can break through, just like the story that Aaron told. You know, what happens in that situation? Who should take charge? Who should help victims like that? You know, that's where it really needs to happen, and it needs to move forward. So yeah. I'm optimistic, but certainly, you know, I'm sure Aaron can tell you this. It doesn't feel like much is being done sometimes when you're on that level.
And as one little person, you feel like, what can you do as one person? Okay, so if all of us who have been through this sort of happening, what if we all started a nonprofit in our county or city and helped women and men that have are going through the same thing? Because it's our children, it's their futures. You know, my children, the things that they had to go through in the courts, they wouldn't listen. I had to fight for my children, and I had done nothing wrong. And if we all just became that voice and started that help and that aid, I feel like it would just be monumental.
have you seen, what have you seen there in your area, Aaron, on cases being reported or not reported? Have you seen anything in the military community or even just in the civilian community? Because this happens everywhere.
It's a lot of hush hush. Women are so terrified to get help. They were calling me like, Aaron, my husband is abusive and I have no idea what to do. The military doesn't want to help me. Please help me. I would just tell them what I did. And by me saying the steps I took, they did the same thing. A good friend of mine, a girlfriend of mine, Samantha, she was in, a lot of it is narcissistic abuse right now. That is the most common thing you're hearing that people aren't talking about because it's so mind tricker. It's mind trickery and manipulation that you can't wrap your head around or process. So you're scared to talk about it because you feel crazy. So that's a lot of the thing that I'm seeing a lot of is the verbal and emotional abuse and women who are afraid to say anything because of the threats and the manipulation. But they just don't know how to speak out. They don't know where to go. So I gave them the resources. There's a lot of the domestic violence places here are closed down because of COVID. So you can call, you can do a hotline, but you can't go anywhere in person right now. So it's awful. It makes you want to start a whole big thing, but where do you start?
Right.
So. And what can we tell people who can't go in person? Because it's turned into a virtual world in the past 2 years. And so what can we tell people, you know, if they can't, if the phone call is the only way to go, what do you do?
You have to find a victim's advocate. They know every single outlet and resource of what you need to do and what steps you need to take. And they will give you the forms. They'll come to your house. They don't get paid. They're all volunteer workers. So they're very invested. Majority of them have a story of their own that they've escaped or survived. And so they are gung-ho about helping you get where you need to go. So you can search a victim's advocate in any county, any city. And ultimately, I think that's the first step to getting help. That would be my advice.
You know, that's great because some people don't know. Like you said, they have nowhere to start. No, they don't know where to start or who to talk to.
Since COVID, yeah.
Oh my gosh. So Trent, do you foresee more news stories sharing this?
Yeah, sadly, I do. I don't feel like we are at the point right now to where it's going to get better before it's, going to get worse with where we're at right now. And sadly, you know, at least in the area of Central Texas where we're at in Killeen, you know, we're at over a dozen homicides for domestic violence. And just, you know, two cases that really stand out to me that were some of the most traumatic for, I know, my reporters to cover when we were discussing it, but the deaths of two young girls who were killed. One was the stepfather of one of the girls and the other was a cousin of one of them, but 11-year-old Michaela Martin and 6-year-old Alyssa Whitfield, they were both at a home and the stepfather allegedly, you know, had some violent issues with the mother, attacked her, shot her, left her wounded, and then shot and killed the two little girls. And just hearing the family talk about those little girls and their light being extinguished at such a young age. I mean, every parent, their heart breaks. Every person, I think it breaks. And, you know, sadly, that's what really kicked off this momentum to focus on domestic violence, at least in our part of Central Texas, was seeing those little girls and, you know, their lives being lost. And I just fear that with the pandemic, we're not having enough conversations about mental health. At least we might be talking about the problem, but we're not talking about how we're going to address it. Absolutely. I don't want to pretend like I have any of the answers on, you know, what that is. And I would defer obviously to the experts on that. But I think just on a human level, it's something we've already talked about, having those conversations, you know, it's talking, like you said, Aaron, with a victim advocate to where you're talking also even on the phone with the National Domestic Violence Hotline, you know, you're telling someone at least how you're feeling, what you're going through, how much it impacted you. And I think as humans, we need that. We need that validation to feel like we're not going crazy. And, you know, and bottling it up, because one thing I've heard over and over again is that when victims go through these traumatic experiences, and then in the moments afterward, it's like they're being re-victimized again, you know, by not being validated, by not being heard. And I feel like certainly when we're having the isolation, the pandemic, like we've had for the last 2 years, if we don't get that, problem is only going to get worse, and we're going to see a lot more of this, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, we definitely need to have more news stories on survivors like Erin, so that she can, you know, this is why I love working with her to share her story, because more people need to see that you can make it, and this is how you made it. So we need to just get you on more, so you can share, so you can help more people, because they need to hear success. Yeah. I don't want to say success story, but a survivor story.
If I can help one person, I will be happy, and that person can help another person. And if we can create that chain of events, then hallelujah, let's do this. I'm ready.
Yep.
That's exactly it. And I foresee a nonprofit in the future, I think, Erin. So we need It's
already been planned as soon as you said that. How have I never thought of that? I obsessively help people. And I'm destined for that anyway. I have a story for a reason. I need to utilize it. And I've always been a helper, you know, before this part of my story. So I've always wanted to utilize my life in helping other people in some way. I just never knew how. You just totally answered my life destiny.
Oh my God. I don't want to say I hope to see more news stories, Trent. I hope to see more positive ones.
No. And you brought up a good point. I think it is a success, you know, seeing someone go through something so traumatic and being able to carry on their life and carry on wanting to help others. I think that is a success, and we do need more of that. It's just the road to get there, unfortunately, is a very dark one. And I think by at least bringing it out into light, we can try to help, you know, more men, women, and children, you know, get through that for the better.
No, absolutely. I think we need to do a series.
Yes.
Like, we should do a series. I see a collaboration coming. Let's do something. And that's exactly why we have this. And this is why I created the podcast, is because there's so many hard things out there that aren't talked about. Mm-hmm. And we just need to start that conversation. And it takes so many years to get there. You know, for some people, it took me 5 years to finally be in a place to where I could actually share. And there's a lot of people out there who don't know how to get to that place. So we have to, you know, we have to share our survivor story, because you can make it. You absolutely can. We just need to show them how.
Have to see the light that comes from that darkness. If they don't see that, then of course they're just going to be scared their whole lives to walk away. But there is such a light in loving yourself that comes from that fear and that climb and that fight. And I mean, it builds a lot of strength and character and resiliency. That's for sure.
You're right. And I'm glad I'm glad to hear, Trent, when you mentioned how they were bringing out other people with them on these calls, the social worker crisis manager. I was reading something. I think it's in San Antonio, mental health units. They have a mental health unit. I thought that was phenomenal. And because every call is different. You don't know what's going on behind the scenes. So you can't just go out there and answer like a normal case. You have to take into consideration now the mental health, because no one ever saw that before. No,
yes.
It wasn't a thing that was taken seriously. So it's taken so long to get here, but I'm just glad that at least it's coming into the works. You know, there's people that are actually doing it. And yeah, I want to try. I'm still on this mission to save the world. And I keep telling people that, and I'm going to do it. We're going to do it. All of us are going to do it together. So
I'm right behind you.
I know you are. Oh, well, thank you guys so much for coming on here. Is there any last words that you want to share with our viewers and our listeners on the topic of domestic abuse?
I would just say that, you know, one line that one of my reporters kept saying over and over, which I think is so important to stress, is that help is just a phone call away. You know, there is help out there for people. You're not alone. And it might feel like you are as you go through this process, but telling your story, getting it out there, and trying to find a sense of normalcy, at least on what life looks like afterward. I mean, people like Aaron, you know, they're living proof that, you know, the human spirit can kind of overcome anything. And it's important to do that, to always ask for help and, you know, to look at great examples.
Absolutely. What about you, Aaron? Any last words?
Sure. I got to be the last word girl here. I say there's one life and there's one chance at happiness. Abuse is abuse. And if you don't get out, you're stuck with it. There's very rare that does somebody change. There is help out there for abusers, but it's, you know, it's just very rare that they change. So get out, get help, and live for yourself. Live for your own happiness. It's totally worth it.
Thank you. That was,
you are welcome.
I love it. Thank you guys so much. And for all of you who weren't here on the live, you can find us on YouTube, on LinkedIn, and on the podcast Facebook page, The Truths We Hide Podcast. If you have any questions, feel free to comment, reach out. We will get you in contact with the right resource and get your story heard. So, and of course, the National Domestic Hotline down on below. Please, please reach out. And if you don't want to reach out to them, reach out to one of us. So thank you so much.